Blog Talk Radio.
Everybody, and welcome to today's episode of Trundlebed Tales. I'm your host, Sarah Utoff, creator of Trundlebed Tales, where we bring Laura Ingalls Wilder children's literature and history to life. Today, our program, we're going to be talking to Tessa Flack, who is the new head of the Laura Ingalls Wilder Memorial Society in DeSmet, and I hopefully she will be joining us very shortly. We had a bit of a technical gaffe earlier, and so I don't have her on the line right now, but hopefully we will in a minute. So in the meantime, here we go with a little housekeeping. But if you hear that sound, which is the noise made by washing metal plates in a metal wash tub on the stove, then you know it's time for a little housekeeping. And here on Trundlebed Tales, our housekeeping means giving you the information you may need about the show. If you ever want to listen to an episode live, but you don't want to just stream it through the computer, you can call in at 714-242-5253. That's 714-242-5253. Or toll free 1-877-633-9389. That's toll free 1-877-633-9389. You can also use those same numbers to call in and ask a question and otherwise be on the show. Just make sure that you hit 1 when they ask you to, so the little symbol comes up and I know you have a question so that you want to talk. Anytime you're streaming an episode, you can also join in the chat room. Unless there's some technical issue, I always open it up. You'll find you have the easiest time accessing the chat room if you log in, either using your Facebook login or if you go ahead and create a Blog Talk Radio account. The account is free and makes it easier to do several things, including sign up to follow shows and get an email anytime a new episode is scheduled or is archived and you can listen to the stream. If you enjoy Trundlebed Tales, then you can find us many other places around the web as well. Besides appearing on the podcast, there's also a Trundlebed Tales YouTube channel that has both travel diaries and short films about things related to Laura, like a video of what it's like to wade in Plum Creek and one of Shirley Knockmoose ringing the church bell, that's right, pause bell, in Walnut Grove. You can also find our page on Facebook and like it, our Twitter account, and I also have a Laura Ingalls Wilder interest group on LinkedIn, and you can find us there too. So there's always more Laura things to talk about. I hope you. And I think we've got Tessa on the line, so let's just finish up this housekeeping. And all right, and Tessa, is that you?
Yes, it is.
Oh, yay. Praise the Lord and pass the ammunition. I always get real nervous when I don't have somebody on the line before the program starts.
That's fine.
Well, thank you for joining us here today, Tessa. And we are going to hopefully have a pretty good program today. And we're got some questions that we're going to go through, but as I mentioned in housekeeping, if anybody out there is listening, and we've got a few people in the chat room, you can either call in or you can chat in and jump in whenever you want to. So for right now, let's just start out. Tessa, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Okay. Well, I'm Tessa Fluck, and I'm the new director at the Laura Ingalls Wilder Memorial Society. I started in October of 2015, so I've been here for a little less than 6 months now. So it's been pretty interesting. I guess I'm an Iowa native, and I am a recent graduate from Iowa State University.
Well, we're always glad to support Iowa people, even if they did go to Iowa State. We're Hawkeye people ourselves, but okay. I'm going to start out. I never know who exactly is listening to the program, and some people may know all about the Memorial Society already, and some might not. So I just wanted to start out with a couple of sort of general questions about the Memorial Society for listeners who may not have gotten a chance to get there, which they should, because the SMET is the happiest place on earth. So the real happiest place on earth. So for people who don't know, what exactly is the Laura Ingalls Wilder Memorial Society?
Well, the Memorial Society started in 1957, the year Laura passed away. And it started off with, you know, just three friends over coffee, and they wanted to, you know, preserve Laura's legacy. And they got together, and they first started by, you know, preserving the Surveyor's House, and then it expanded on to the Ingalls home and everything. So right now we have quite a few different buildings. Excuse me. The Surveyor's House is one of the first that we have. And that's one of the first homes that Laura lived in when they came to Dakota Territory. We have the Ingalls home, which is the house that Pa built on 3rd Street. We have a replica Brewster School that Laura talks about in her books. It's one of the first schools she taught at. And then we have the First School, which is our newest building that we've added into our on our property and everything. And that one was moved just a few years back, and it's been restored and everything. And Laura and her little sister Carrie attended the First School of the SMET. And so we have quite a few buildings here at the Memorial Society. And we do tours. The tours usually last about an hour and a half or so. And we go through all the different buildings, and we talk about Laura's travels, her family, her life, her books.
So what are the tours like? Is it something that's mostly listening to someone? Is this the kind of museum where people touch stuff, or the kind of museum where people shouldn't?
A little bit of both. We do have some hands-on activities that they can do while on the tours. And like in the Surveyor's House, we have a few hands-on things, but at the Ingalls home, it's more just looking. We have some artifacts that are out and everything that you can just look at, but we ask you not to touch them. So it's a little bit of both.
Okay, so besides having and maintaining these buildings, what else is the mission of the Memorial Society? What other kind of things do you do?
Well, our mission is just preserving Laura's legacy, and so we try to do a lot of activities, hands-on ones with the kids, and try and get them, you know, to get a little more interested in Laura's life and pioneers in general. And so that's really our main mission, is to get people to know about her life, her family, what all happened, what was life really like back then, different things like that.
And you keep an archive of materials.
Yes,
you have a museum collection of objects, and you are the main functioning Laura Ingalls Wilder publication, the Laura Lore.
Yes. We do have over 2,000 artifacts in our archives, and so it is quite a bit, so we're thrilled about that. We have all sorts of Ingalls Wilder artifacts, and even many items from the local area here. We also have an exhibit room where we display many of those artifacts, and they're rotated just annually and everything. So people Guests who take the tours are also able to go to our exhibit room and look at a lot of our artifacts.
You also have a pretty cool gift shop. I'd say one of the top three, and there's people can also buy stuff online, right?
Yes. Yep. We have an online gift shop. Yep.
I guess I jumped ahead.
And if you can't find anything on there, just feel free to call us.
And I jumped ahead on one of my questions. I guess I meant to ask this later, but since I already started, are you rolling out any new products this year? I always like to see what's new that I haven't bought yet.
Let's see. Well, we have a lot of different clothing options. We have more guy, male clothing options. We have new like unisex T-shirts. We have some women's shirts with a picture of the surveyor's house on it and some information. Let's see. We're also doing different pioneer dresses, and so you get a lot of different options there, too.
Okay, well, to get back on terms, did you have something else?
I guess I was just thinking that we're also going to be coming out with our fourth ornament. And so
ooh,
that
I love those ornaments.
Yeah, they're really cute.
Okay, so let's say, yeah, I have been to DeSmet a lot because I really meant it when I think it's the real happiest place on earth. I mean, I know Disney, I love Disney too, but DeSmet is such a great place, and I've been fortunate enough to get to visit quite a few times. But if I was somebody who came in and didn't do enough research and was just, where should I start? Where do I find you, and where is the first place to go?
The Memorial Society is located on the northeast side of town, just before you hit the railroad tracks. And what you're first going to want to do is come to our gift shop, and there we'll give you a map, and we'll explain what we offer in town and what's all around, what you can do and see. And we also start our tours at the gift shop. So you can come in if you want to do a tour. We'll take you through the four different buildings we have. You can look at our exhibits. You can go through the gift shop. But we'll also talk to you about the map. So on there, we'll talk about, you know, the Ingalls Homestead, where Laura and Alonzo's homestead is located just north of town here. There's a little historic marker that we'll point out. Where the five cottonwood trees are planted. And then we'll talk about, you know, where the cemetery is located and who's buried there. And also, you can do your own walking tour of the downtown area. And in the business windows, we have little signs that we put up. And those talk about, you know, the significance of the building, what it was when Laura was here, different things like that. So we'll go over all of that when you come to the gift shop.
Okay, now before we move on from our kind of general Memorial Society questions, I get a lot of confusion about where the Memorial Society gets its funding. Is it from, I get people who are thinking it comes from the state of South Dakota or from the national government. A lot of people think it's a national historic site or that you're getting money from the Laura Ingalls Wilder estate. But where, in fact, do you get your funding?
Most of our funding comes from gift shop sales and generous donors.
So if people really want to see these kind of things continue, it's important they shop in the gift shop and hopefully make donations, right?
Exactly. We don't get support from the government, at least other than grants and different things like that. But most of our funding comes from donors. And so, I guess just this last year, we started an annual fundraiser because we were, you know, getting a little behind in everything. So we're going to continue to do an annual fundraiser to try and keep up everything so that the Memorial Society can continue for future generations.
So
it's definitely really important that, you know, if there are, you know, like, let's just say, you know, William Anderson's new book, The Selected Letters of Laura Ingalls Wilder, just came out on the 8th. And I put up, you know, different Facebook posts and different information on the social media and everything. So if you want to help support us, definitely go through there and, you know, call us, go on our online gift shop and everything. But definitely, you know, give us your support through the sales and everything. So that'll definitely help us.
So when you say fundraiser, do you mean just like a campaign, or do you mean that you had an actual event?
Campaign. Yep. It's just an annual campaign that we do.
Okay. So to kind of turn our attention now to you, since you're the new head, and I think there's been a lot of people wondering about you. So DeSmet isn't the first Laura town you've lived in. Where are you from?
I'm from Decorah, Iowa, and I live just a few miles from Baroque, Iowa, where Laura and her family lived in 1876 when she was about 10 years old. And I was a tour guide at the Baroque Museum for 8 years, and I was also on their board for 3 years. So I've been working with them for a really long time. So,
well, it sounds like it.
To be here now in DeSmet.
Yeah, that's one thing I think it would be nice if people were a little bit more transparent about. We don't really, even if you're lore people, we don't really know what's in the board. It's cool you were on it. So you really should be used to dealing with all the ins and outs of a lore museum.
Exactly.
What is your educational background?
Well, like I mentioned in the beginning, I'm a recent graduate from Iowa State University. I graduated in May 2015 with a double major in anthropology and sociology. And so it's not a history background, but I've always loved history, and I've always loved Laura Ingalls Wilder. I tried out for Baroque's Little Miss Laura contest for 3 years. I never got it, but my sister did, and so I got to take along with her for the different activities that she was involved in. And then I started working when I was 14 at the museum. So I've been there all throughout college and everything. So it was a perfect fit. But, you know, so I guess.
You'd done an internship at the Westerheim. I often
yes.
Recommend people who are visiting Baroque stop at the Westerheim. So why don't you just tell us a little bit about that?
I did an internship just this last summer with Westerheim, and I was there for a few months. I worked on the online art exhibition site, and every year during their annual Nordic Fest celebrations, they have four different groups. There's like rose mauling, knife making, wood carving, different things like that. And so I would go around, take the pictures, interview everybody, and I would put it onto their online art exhibition. So it just has a site with a collection of past and present artists. So.
For those of you who don't know, the Westerheim, Westerheim means Western home and in Norwegian, and it is the national museum of Norwegian American history, and they have a phenomenal collection, including some open storage, which is always really cool to see, and they have outbuildings and lots of neat stuff. It's a really nicely done museum, and it's fairly known, well known in museum circles nationally.
It's the largest Norwegian American museum in the U.S., and what's really interesting is that I mean, it is very well known, and a lot of Norwegian travelers that come to the U.S. actually stop by and go through the museum. So that's pretty interesting. You get to meet a lot of different people.
So as someone with a little bit more formal background in museums with the internship and things, are you planning to make any changes in the experience visitors have in DeSmet or in the training of the guides?
Well, at this time, I'm working on updating our exhibits so we can get more artifacts out and everything and rotate those a little bit more. So that's definitely one of my main goals at this point. I would like to change up our tours a little bit so that it goes a little more along with the Pioneer Girl book that just came out last year. So those are really my two main goals at this point. We do have a lot of new merchandise that's coming through, so that'll change up the gift shop a little bit. But right now, those would be the few changes that I'm making here.
Okay, so let's talk about some of the society's recent big projects. Is the first school restoration completed now? Will you leave it as it is now, or are you going to do a little bit more as it is, I could see it going either way.
Well, right now, I'm planning to keep it as is. Once this main season is complete, next year I might do a few different changes. But I haven't been here long enough to really see some of those changes that need to be done. So I'm just, you know, a lot of the time, what we're going to do really is just continue as we have been. And if I see something that needs to be done or that needs to be fixed or improved for visitors, then that'll be next year's project.
Okay. How did your efforts go? The Society was trying to get a representative collection of Garth Williams illustrations as they were coming on the market from the estate. How did that work? There was a big fundraising campaign for that, and I think it was fairly successful. I know you got some pieces. How did that turn out?
That fundraiser went very well. It's amazing how many people, when we asked them for donations, everything, how many people were just giving us a lot. You know, it's for something like that, I think it's really important to get the word out and everything, and people just, they really loved Garth Williams' illustrations, and so, you know, they were just very generous with us, and we were able to get 63 of those illustrations, so it was quite a few that we got. At the beginning, our main goal was just to get one from each of the books, at least about her time here in DeSmet, but you know, we raised so much that we were able to get 63 of them.
Oh, well, that is a nice selection.
It is. And so I know this last year, Cheryl, the previous director, she had out on display about 9 of them. And so this year I'm hoping to rotate those and get a few more out in our exhibits. So if visitors come, they're able to see those.
So you started answering this question, but how will you be displaying them in the future, and is there a certain, since they did cost so much, how will you come up with a storing system for them?
Yes, we do have a collection storage room and everything, and so they're all protected and everything, but we just have to be really careful when we have them out in the in the exhibit and everything, so they're going to have to be rotated fairly often and everything. And with our recent annual campaign, on our wish list, I had asked for donations for our exhibits and everything, and that included getting new cases so that, in these cases, they're fairly expensive so that they're able to protect all of the illustrations and everything. So we're still working on looking into that and raising money so that we can display more.
Recently, other illustrators that are connected to Laura Projects, like Renee Grafe and Jody Wheeler, have been selling off illustrations that they did for various Laura Projects. Now, I know you'd had a big focus on Garth Williams. Since I think you really have, at this point at least, I'm fairly confident in saying you have the biggest Laura Ingalls Wilder illustration collection among all the Laura home sites. Are you looking to expand it to other authors too? I understand there's a lot of demands on the money right now, but is that something that you're looking at?
At this point, we've discussed it, but we haven't made any actions to actually go through with it or anything. It's just something we're still kind of throwing around. It'd be really nice if we were able to do that, and we'd probably start another campaign and everything. But I guess right now we're just focusing on trying to preserve the ones that we do have. So we haven't really thought about getting any more at this point.
Okay. There have been some big changes made in the Third Street house in the last few years, pulling a lot of the rose stuff that had been on display out of the house and, I'm assuming, into storage, and replacing them with kind of generic bedrooms for the girls. Are you planning on revisiting that floor, or do you have any, you know, ongoing plans for it?
At this point, I don't have any plans to change it. But we do have a lot of roses items in our collections, and I'm hoping to put those out in our exhibits this year. So a few of Rosa's things will be out on display, but they won't be in the Ingalls home.
So. Okay. Last year, the Memorial Society helped sponsor an outstanding cemetery tour by Nancy Cleveland. I heard Bill Anderson say that it was one of the most one of the best things that he'd seen anybody do in DeSmet. Are you going to be repeating that this year?
Well, Nancy Cleveland has done a lot of research in the past here at the Memorial Society, and that's been slowing down a bit. I haven't yet spoken with her, so I'm not sure what her future plans are. So at this point, we don't have any plans. But if she's in the area, I would definitely love to have her do it again. But
okay.
It's definitely something to think about. You know, cemetery tours are usually fantastic, and she did a great job last year. So it's definitely something to think about that we can add on to our tours. So
I know you've been there 6 months. That's, you know, they often say that you shouldn't really make too many changes in the first 6 months as a new boss, because you've got to figure out exactly how things work, or
yeah, exactly.
Otherwise. Well, to give you the library example, because, anybody doesn't know, I'm a librarian. That's my real job. But to give the library example, you can throw out the series of Thornton Burgess books that the teachers use every year for a project because they're old. So you have to kind of wait a little bit to find out what's going on and what's being used and sort of what the major issues are. But you've been there 6 months now. So do you have any kind of big goals, either, you know, things that you would like to have done by this time next year, or things that you see coming up as a 5-year goal, or just projects that you see that need to be dealt with ASAP, or sort of what is the view from where you are?
Well, at this point, I have many different ideas that I'd like to, you know, move ahead with. One of them is updating the Ingalls family book. I know there's a few errors in that book, and I just want to keep it updating everything. So that's one of my main goals, is just to update the work that the Memorial Society has come out with. Another is I want to work on the surveyor's house. Right now we have just originally the surveyor's house was made out of board and batten, and I would like to get back to that. So I'd like to take down the current siding and put up some board and batten. And it might be new stuff, but I want to get back to what it actually originally looked like. So that's one of my main goals here now, is to work on getting everything to look like it actually did in the past.
Okay. One thing that has raised a lot of questions online is the conversion of the previous subscription system to the Lore to be part of a larger membership system. It was previously very strictly a subscription. You know, you'd always be told if you went in there and said, you know, I've got a membership, they'd say, you only have a subscription. So now it's going to be a membership system. And do you want to explain a little bit about what that is and how it's going to work and how people can participate in that if they want to?
Yes. Right now, those The individuals that have had memberships in the past, and that if they have a lifetime membership, we will continue to keep that, you know, up for them. And so they will continue to have their membership forever and everything, so they don't need to pay anything more, so they can
keep
it as...
Well, that's good to hear. I know a lot of people have been concerned about that.
There has been quite a bit of confusion on that. So if you already have, you know, a Laura subscription and a membership and everything, that'll continue until the expiration. So if you're a lifetime member, you'll always get it. You won't have to pay anything more. But if you had, like, a three-year membership, after those 3 years, you'll be done. And really, now with our new campaign, Laura's Legacy, that we've done, if you give $25, you will be able to receive both Laura's, and we only do two a year. So you'll be able to get the Laura with a lot of other, different, what do you want to call it? But other than, you know, the Laura, for $25, you get a free tour and your name listed in the newsletter. If you gave, you know, $100 or more, you would get the newsletter, free tour, your name listed in the newsletter, 10% off in our gift shop, and your name on our donor wall. So there's lots of different advantages depending on your level of giving. But right now it's just going to be a yearly donation. So every year you'd have to renew that.
So we saw the information about that come out. Is there going to be plans for doing something else? Are you planning on doing a letter campaign next year, or an actual event, or, you know, I don't know, a raffle or anything like that? Or is it just going to sort of basically be that this program's going to be in place?
At this point, I believe we'll just do another letter campaign. We might have an event, but we haven't discussed it.
So. Okay. Well, speaking of events, the big thing during the summer is always the Laura Ingalls Wilder Pageant, and sometimes the Memorial Society has extra things going on those weekends. Is there anything that you've planned so far for the pageant weekends?
Well, I'm hoping to do a lot of hands-on activities. And I won't have that just for the pageant weekends. I'll try and have at least, you know, a few different activities going on throughout the week. So even if you can't make it for the pageant, at least there's, you know, a few more things that you can do when you come through and everything. So, you know, it might be we could make some animal tracks or doing yarn dolls or different things like that. Just small projects that they can work on and take home with them. So I definitely want to do some more hands-on activities. But we're still discussing what we're going to be doing for the pageant weekends. So.
One of the things I really like is, at least you've done past years, I assume you're going to keep doing it, is a sort of postcard scavenger hunt, sort of like geocache without the geo part, that you're, you know, you get the little booklet and then you go and find the postcards around town. Are you going to be doing that again?
I don't believe we've done that in just recent years here, but it is something to think about to do again. So it'd definitely be a great project and activity to do.
Okay. One thing that I've also gotten some questions about is social media, and if the Memorial Society is going to have more of a voice on screen to be sort of more frequent communication with people. There was, when Nicole Ozinga was at Walnut Grove, it was really great because she was very active on, you know, various group sites, and she answered questions. And when Roland, oh, I'm going to mispronounce your name, Roland. I'm sorry if you're listening. Ridestorm? It's something close to that. I'm sorry, Roland. was there. He'd been a little more active, but since then, it's the Memorial Society has been not quite so much. Do you have plans to kind of be more interactive, or is that just kind of falling down the priorities list?
Well, in recent years, Cheryl's had a communication specialist working with us to write the blogs and to do Facebook posts and go on our Pinterest page and everything like that. And right now we're still working on a transition, so I will be taking over all of our social media accounts. And so we have been working on, you know, more blogs and different things. And because there's multiple people working on them, there has been a few errors and different things. And I just want people to know that they're, you know, with multiple people working on them and everything getting moved around so much, that there has been a few errors, but we're trying to work on that and get those corrected. And I definitely am, you know, hoping to continue doing all the different blogs and Facebook posts and everything and trying to get more online for people, for those who aren't able to actually visit us in person but still are very interested in learning about Laura. So I'm hoping to do put out more information from our collections and different things so people can continue to learn. And that's one of our main goals online.
Well, that sounds very good. I'm glad to hear that, because it's not only nice to have a little bit more interaction online, it's, I think, a good way to reach out to especially younger people, because it just, there is a gap, I think, in Laura fans to some extent, because when No Child Left Behind went through, it killed interdisciplinary things between social study and English, just the way it was set up. And those were the Laura Ingalls Wilder programs. So while there's still schools that do Laura, and there's quite a few of those, there are not as many as there were. So I think outreach is a definite need, you know, where the younger people are. So I'm glad to hear that. We've got a few more minutes than I had questions written out for. So but I think we can keep talking a little while anyway. If you had, what right now is the biggest problem that is facing the buildings physically, that is a problem that you want to deal with? Is there anything going wrong that people would especially be interested in wanting to have funds for?
Well, I had mentioned wanting to fix up the surveyor's house, and that's one of our main goals, is trying to preserve that. And so we are asking for funds to help us do that for, you know, future generations so it can still be here. Now, that the surveyor's house was moved, it used to stand 1 mile east of its current location near Silver Lake, and it was moved to the location where it's at now, next to our visitor center, in 1885. So it's a very old building, and right now we have a white exterior siding on it. And underneath that, it's the original board and batten. And since it is an older building, and with all the weather and everything, it's, you know, caused some damage. And so one of my goals is to try and fix that and help preserve it, you know, for future years. And so one of my goals is to take down the current white siding and put up new board and batten. So we'll definitely be needing... we'll need to raise funds to do that. That's my goal for, you know, the next 5 years or so.
Are you going to be working with a historic homes expert?
We are looking into getting an expert for a historical preservation. So we have been working with the South Dakota, the state and everything on that. So they've done different tests and different things. So they're helping us with that.
Well, that's good to hear, and I will just give you kind of a little bit of a heads up. The Herbert Hoover Birthplace Cottage here in Iowa in West Branch, they had done some tests, And while they were inconclusive, they thought that it leaned a little bit more towards it being unpainted. So they decided that they were going to, since they couldn't leave the wood exposed, that they were going to paint it brown to try and make it look like unpainted wood.
Right.
Which, personally, I thought was, they didn't follow through on it because they didn't paint the white picket fence brown, too, because so it looked like they painted their fence and not the house, which I always thought looked stupid, mm-hmm. but that's just me. But anyway, there was such an outcry that it had been white for all those years that people wanted it white that they eventually ended up having to paint it white again. So just a little bit of a heads up. So I think it's good that you start talking about it now, so people can get used to the idea. But I think that's cool that you want to take it back and make it a little bit more historic how it looks. Yeah.
Well, see, that's kind of the issue is that, you know, a lot of our visitors come and they see this cute, you know, white siding, this house that's, you know, cute and adorable kind of thing, but that's not really what it looked like. It was just board and batten. It wasn't painted or anything, so we're trying to get back to the original, but it's not going to look the prettiest.
mm-hmm. And while we're talking about the surveyor's house, this is not a question that I know if you have the answer to because it happened before you were there, but it's something I've been curious about. There used to be, for some reason that I never really entirely understood, a miniature surveyor's house sitting right next to the surveyor's house, sort of doghouse size, and then it disappeared. And then the cement pad was still there for like 2 years, and now the cement pad's gone. And would you happen to know anything about that? Like I said, this isn't a fair question because I didn't warn you ahead of time, and, you know, I wouldn't expect you to know because it's a few years, but it's been bugging me. So I thought, while I had the chance, I'd ask.
I've never even heard of that, I guess. So I'm not really for sure what that was.
Okay. Well, fair enough, as I said. It was
definitely something to look into because now I'm, you know, wondering what that is.
Yeah, it was a strange thing because, I mean, it wasn't big enough to be a playhouse. You couldn't get into it or anything. Even for little kids, they couldn't have gotten into it. But it was, you know, a fairly substantial sized model. It was like maybe the size of a picnic table, that kind of thing. And it's just, it, not that I particularly cared about it. It was just like, huh, where did that go?
Right.
But, okay, well, how have you enjoyed moving to DeSmet? I know there is a lot. There are a lot of fans out there that talk about, you know, someday getting to live in DeSmet because they enjoy it so much during the summer. But you've been there during the winter now. So what? How is it like to move to DeSmet?
Well, I'm glad that I lived in the Midwest before moving out here because you're a little more aware of what the weather is like and everything. Living in, like, northeast Iowa, we had, you know, a lot of snow and everything like that. And so that I was always used to. But the wind out here, it's very windy. So that was something to get used to and everything.
I know what you mean about the being in the Midwest already. When they put Carver Hawkeye, the arena together, it had a flat roof, and I think they've worked with it a little bit so it isn't quite as flat as it was, but it was a perfectly flat roof, and the guy was from California who designed it, and people said, oh, what are you going to do when it snows? Well, we're going to put these things on it so the snow will melt. And they said, huh, what happens when the power goes out? And he said, it does that. So,
exactly.
Yeah, it's good not to have a California attitude. And the wind is definitely severe in DeSmet.
It is.
While I personally love DeSmet, and I really, you know, I'm never there more than a few days, so maybe it's easy for me to say, but I never mind the wind. But when my mom has come with me on a couple trips, and she just hates it. She hates it. She says, I'd never be able to live out here on the farm because of the wind. But it definitely, I'm sure, would be something to get used to.
Yeah. But overall, it's been a nice change in everything. The people here are very friendly and very helpful. So that's been going great. I've been meeting a lot of new people. I have a lot more, you know, a lot more people to meet and everything. But it's been going very well. But, like I said, I was you know, kind of used to the weather and everything, so that hasn't been the worst. I guess it's winter has been, you know, fairly mild, though, compared to, you know, other years. So maybe next year it'll be a little worse, but I'm living in town, so it's not too bad.
Do they think it's going to be a wet year, so it'll be a good year to see Silver Lake, or is it? Are they talking about, we didn't have enough snow, so it's going to be dry?
I don't think we've had enough snow, so I don't think there'll be too much water or anything. So
just as a practicality question, if you were, do you just have to buy all your groceries in town then, or do you go like to Brookings, or how does that kind of work? Because for those of you out there, there is no Walmart in DeSmet.
There isn't. We just have just over 1,000 people, and we do have a grocery store. So you can go there, but Brookings is about 45 miles east of us on Highway 14, and Huron is about half an hour west of us. So those both have Walmarts and everything. So you can go there.
I guess I never realized Huron was closer, because as far west as I get is DeSmet. Once in a while, Manchester. I keep saying I'm going to get out to Keystone again, but I never do. DeSmet's where I stop.
Yep. Huron isn't too far, so that's okay. But I guess, you know, for me, I grew up in northeast Iowa, and Rochester, Minnesota, and La Crosse, Wisconsin were, you know, only an hour away from me. So I was so used to living near bigger cities. And then Sioux Falls for me here is, you know, an hour and a half away. So it's just a little further. But out here on the prairie and everything, everything's so flat, and it seems just to take longer to get places. So I'm still trying to get used to that. But a lot of people shop in Sioux Falls around here. So.
Well, I just wondered. It's a little different when you're living someplace than when you're just passing through.
It is.
Okay, well, that is coming up on about 50 minutes, and since we've already gotten through our questions mostly, was there anything else you wanted to talk about?
I guess not at this moment, but thank you for having me. I definitely really appreciate it, and letting me, you know, just talk about the Memorial Society and what our hopes and our goals are and everything. So it's definitely helpful.
Well, I'm sure glad that you could come on and that it worked out for you, and that I hope that you have a lot of good luck with the society, and that we hear from you more often, and we'll have to have you come on again sometime.
Yes, I would enjoy that. So, thank you.
Do you want to, just before you head out, want to give contact information where if people are listening to this and they want to follow up, like where the society is as far as social media or phone number or anything like that?
Sure. Our website is on www.discoverlaura.org, and on there you can find contact information, and it'll talk about the tours and directions to get here and everything. Also, our online gift shop is there, along with our blog that you can follow us on. If you have any questions, please feel free to contact us at 1-800-880-3383, and we'd be happy to talk with you about anything. So.
All right. Well, thank you very much, and we will, well, as I have two trips planned to DeSmet this year, so I hopefully will see you on one of them.
Sounds great. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you to everybody for joining in today. And I wanted to let you know that before the end of the month here, we're going to have two more episodes. I kind of missed the World Read Aloud Day, and I kind of... Well, it just kind of snuck up on me, I must admit it. But I am going to do an episode, and I may not give a lot of prior warning to it, because it's basically in honor of World Read Aloud Day, I'm going to read the next chapter of the Mary J. Holmes book, which is the only novel. There's also a book of short stories that Laura mentions by name in the book, Milbank. And I read a chapter, the first chapter of that 2 years ago. And last year I had a little voting poll, and people wanted to read more of the Big Green Animal book. But I think we're going to go back to Milbank for this time. And so hopefully we'll get another chapter done. And you can already check out the first chapter in our archives. And the second one should get up there sometime before the end of the month, so that we can at least be in reading month. And then another episode that we have planned is another Travel Times episode. And this Travel Times episode is going to be talking with Jessica O'Reilly from Travel Iowa. And we're going to learn about all the places to visit in Iowa. We're going to look at classic sites like Living History Farms, Plow and Oak, which I love, the Havana Colonies, which everybody should eat at least once, and the West Union Grotto. And then new sites that have just recently started. So if you are either looking for a place within driving distance, or you're going to be in the general area anyway on a Laura trip, we're going to be talking about some things that you might be interested in. And that will be a 30-minute episode. It will be this Monday at 10 a.m. Central Time. So next month, we are going to hopefully be back with three episodes again, and we're working on trying to keep that up this year, and I'm going to work on the episodes where I don't have a guest, trying to do the programs at about 2 o'clock on a Sunday afternoon Central Time, just so we can keep things a little bit more even, to see if we can get more people to tune in. So I want to remind everybody that Trundlebed Tales is available all over the web. There is our blog at trundlebedtales.wordpress.com. There is the website at trundlebedtales.com that is in need of some updates. That's one of my projects when it's still kind of winter too. We're on Twitter at Trundlebed Tales, on Facebook and Trundlebed Tales. On Google Plus, though I must admit I don't do hardly anything there. And YouTube, which I haven't been keeping updated very often lately because I'm just so sick of having to deal with what Google has made it so you have to jump through YouTube to do, and it's just a pain. I probably, one of these days, I should give up and try and load some things up there again. But I have been loading videos both on the Facebook page and through Vimeo. And I recently got a set edited down because it's easier to take lots of footage than it is to actually have time to sit down and edit it. So my trip to Desmet from 2011 is up on Vimeo, and that was a recent blog post. So you can check that out. I've got links there to both the videos and to the podcast that I did while I was there. And I kind of forgot how much fun I had back in 2011. So take a look and see if you can incorporate any of that stuff in your trips for this year or in the coming years. So thank you, everybody, for joining us here on Trundlebed Tales, where we keep bringing Laura Ingalls Wilder children's literature and history to life. I hope you will join me again for the next episode, and be sure to catch back all our past archives, which you can find either by streaming online at blogtalkradio.com/trundlebedtales. Or you can also find them on iTunes to download them for free as an MP3 to take with you. And if you are an iTunes user, I hope that you will leave comments, because that makes it easier for other people to find me. This is your host, Sarah Utoff, signing off and wishing that you will brighten the corner where you are. Thank you.